Hello and welcome to The Future Report, a podcast hosted by social research company McCrindle for anyone curious about the future. My name is Ashley Fell, and each week I'll be sitting down with a guest to discuss a topic or trend that you need to know about. This year, as we do at the beginning of every year, the team at McCrindle have developed our top trends for 2024. Grant Dusting and I are discussing some of the trends that we believe, on behalf of the broader McCrindle team, are going to shape the year ahead. And so, hello, Grant. Welcome back to the podcast. Great to have you on again.
Thanks, Ash.
We thought we'd delve into the final four trends of these top eight that we have kind of prioritised for this year. So trend number five is a term. I mean, we love to coin a phrase or a term here at McCrindle. And yes, absolutely. And this one people might be able to tell is a bit of a play on words, but the trend is superiority, taken from the word superiority, and really coming off the back of this really great transformation to work that we saw over the last, well, introduced in 2020 with hybrid and work from home and just the necessity for people to be social distancing. We came back from those seasons and people were like, actually, work from home has got some benefits, or remote work's got some benefits. And consistently, our research has shown that people have a preference for hybrid. And there's pros and cons around those different ways of working, which our research has done a lot to explore in terms of often in a remote environment, you get better work-life balance, you get greater flexibility, you get more deep thinking and reflection time. And the inverse of that is when you're in the office or the workplace, you get to build stronger relationships with your colleagues, with leaders, and have a greater ability to collaborate. So that's kind of what we've been seeing and what we've been talking about even on the podcast over the last couple of years. But this latest study we did was fascinating because what it showed was that there is this sense of superiority and a sense of superiority for going to the office or the workplace. And we found from this study that more than half of Australian workers have a sneaking suspicion that those working in the workplace get better opportunities than those working from home. So the implication, I think, for that is that people need to be thinking about for themselves what kind of stage of life they're at, what's important to them, and also for workplace leaders as well to be thinking about, you know, the people who are making the effort to come in versus the people who might be more remote and what different benefits and challenges each of those groups is experiencing. But even for younger workers, might need to take a bit of discipline if you've grown up in this hybrid remote world and you're like, yeah, why would I ever go back to the office? There are some reasons to go back to the office. And especially when you're starting out in your career in terms of that visibility, getting, you know, opportunities, and really this really highlights the importance of the physical workplace as organizations now get to strategically decide how they structure where workers work from. So yeah, do you feel like superiority is something that, I don't know, you see, Grant, or that you reflect on, or that you think will be important for people this year?
I think it's a great term, and we do love to coin a term at McCrindle, don't we? But it's it gets people thinking. And I think a reflection of mine, just hearing you share there, Ash, is that for some people who are in kind of place-bound kind of work context, this whole remote work, hybrid work, like, that's not even a consideration for them. And so none of this, like, this stuff is, I think it's relevant for people to hear, because actually for many businesses, this is like the new world. And it kind of dawned on me over the weekend, like, on the flip side, for those who are in kind of hybrid work environments, often they just assume that, well, that's just what everyone's doing, and forget that there are actually a big section of the population who don't get that opportunity or privilege to work kind of flexibly. So yep. I think wherever yep. people fall, it's good to be aware of the discussions that are happening. And even over the weekend, you know, at a family barbecue, my brother-in-law was talking about a couple of, you know, he's in a bit of transition in his work, and he has a family wedding booked next month in Melbourne. And my mum said, oh, what, you know, won't that be a factor for the different employers, you know, prospective employers you're talking to? And he said, well, no, like, all of them, you know, offer that flexible working, and, you know, he's got that few weeks booked in, and it kind of won't be a big deal for him to work fully remote for those few weeks. And just showing the generational difference Yeah, my mum was quite surprised at that, and just shows that because she hasn't had that awareness. Well, that's not her context. Yeah. So I think for a lot of people, it's good to understand these are the conversations that are happening. This is the norm for so many businesses now. And yet for others, this is, you know, working in, you know, in person, in situ is the only option. So I think it's probably just helpful for people to understand that.
Yeah, and like you mentioned there, context plays a huge role with this trend specifically, because it might not apply to everyone's different work contexts. And I guess on a similar note, particularly for the knowledge economy workforce, but more broadly, I think all of us as consumers, whether we're aware of it or not, trend number six relates to that, which is about our reliance on AI and just the fact that we anticipate, as many other thought leaders and organizations and research papers do, that we're going to become increasingly reliant on artificial intelligence. It's becoming more indispensable in our lives. I mean, we had 2023 really launch, I think, through maybe platforms like ChatGPT, launch that into the consumer's hands, whereas prior to that, AI was being used, but not really by the consumer, by organizations when you went through a self-service checkout or whatever it might be. You know, that was kind of these early phases of AI. Now it's really come into many people's hands, many students' hands, as we've heard from many teachers in terms of working on assignments. But I've seen it through TikTok. I've seen AI conjure images and people making fun of how AI has got it wrong, me personifying AI. Yeah. But I think, you know, we do see this intertwining of just the digital world and connectivity, you know, increasing. That's the path we're on. And in line with that, of course, there are rising concerns as well about the potential consequences of artificial intelligence. And we did do, we did conduct a study about this reliance on digital devices and AI, and we did find that for many majority of Australians, they're using streaming platforms on a weekly basis. They're using digital navigation, and they're using voice-activated personal assistants on their phone. We did find that 24% of Australians are using artificial intelligence at work, at least on a weekly basis. So one in four Australians using that. It was higher on the Gen Ys. It's huge, one in four. And for many people, they would be working in jobs where that's not even an option. So that it's just, again, if we had narrowed that down more, but, you know, like for the knowledge economy, that would be huge. But yeah, Gen Y using it slightly more than Gen Z, which I thought was fascinating as well through the insights. But like we mentioned as well, alongside this trend comes the concerns that people have around the advancement of AI specifically, and the top concerns that we found from our survey respondents was lack of governance and regulation leading to potential misuse of AI, privacy concerns, and losing our skills and independence because of over-reliance on AI. And slightly after that was replacing jobs. So there is these different ways of how's our data being used? Is it going to replace me? Is a robot going to come and replace my job and make me redundant? There's lots of different ways that I think we can, lenses we can apply on this, but what we're saying in this trend is just this increasing reliance on it as it becomes more sophisticated, as it becomes more accessible. That's something that we see and anticipate for 2024. Any reflections on the AI reliance from you, Grant?
Oh, it's, it's a big tidal wave, isn't it? That's crashing on all of us. I feel like ChatGPT, you know, launched a bit over a year ago, November 2022, I believe. ChatGPT is to AI what the Apple iPhone is to kind of smartphones. It's not necessarily the first and not necessarily the best, but it's the one that people know and gets people talking and aware. And I think there's so many AI applications and uses beyond ChatGPT, but that's kind of one that's really brought it into focus. I think it was the Collins Dictionary who put AI as their word of the year. And personally, I think they got it right. I think that was the defining kind of concept for 2023 personally. And I think we're going to see, you know, see it talked about more and more. And I wonder, out of those one in four, was it one in four employees who use AI in their jobs? I wonder how many of their employers know they're using it. Like, that'd be an interesting kind of follow-up, wouldn't it? So lots to consider.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to a really I find this one fascinating. I mean, I find them all fascinating, but this one particularly, as we kind of move into the generational lens over some trends, number seven, the seventh trend for 2024, we have described as the grandparent economy. And effectively what led us to this was we definitely wanted to include a trend about the economy. We believe this one encompasses the context of the rising cost of living, the rising housing unaffordability that's plaguing us here in Australia, as well as many other nations across the world, but also the fact that there are some generations at our oldest end who may not be feeling those impacts maybe as much as the younger demographics, because they have lived through some really fascinating economic times. They invested early, a lot of them, in property and other assets that they've just seen appreciate, and in some ways they're benefiting from rising interest rates if they've got savings, if they've got assets that they don't have mortgages against, particularly with regards to housing. And so, again, this has come from quite a bit of our intergenerational wealth research, where we know if we combine the baby boomers and the builders generation, so basically anyone over 55, those two generations comprise about 28% of the population, but they own 67% of the nation's wealth. And even if we just looked at baby boomers, they comprise 21% of the population and own about 48% of the nation's private wealth, so about half. So really they're outstripping their population size with regards to the wealth that they have. There's this wealth transfer that's going to happen, of course, in the coming years, which will filter down to the generations. But in terms of this generation of grandparents, even we looked at some of these insights, and this current generation of grandparents are continuing to live longer and they're remaining active well into their later years. And so their investments in properties and superannuation funds become pivotal components of this broader economic landscape that we're talking about. And we believe that this trend signifies a notable shift, even in the traditional roles of grandparents, who are now not just recipients of support, but active participants and contributors to this evolving economic dynamic. They're helping out their grandkids with the cost of education, with cost of childcare, with helping their own millennial children or Gen X children in some cases with these costs. And we found as well that Gen Z were much more likely than the baby boomers to say they'd been helped by their own generation of grandparents. Mm. So when the baby boomers, you know, were younger themselves, I think it was only 1% of baby boomers in our survey said that they had received financial support for overseas travel, for example, compared to 16% of Gen Z today who said, yep, grandparents have helped out a little bit with that overseas trip on the Contiki or the Top Deck tour or whatever it might be. So you've got this real difference in how grandparents are operating, and we do put that partly down to the economic climate that we're in. Grant, any reflections on the grandparent economy and how it's, I guess, actively contributing and shaping the financial dynamics of the year ahead and the years to come, even beyond that?
I really like this one because I think it is an economic trend, as you've highlighted there. There's some of the stats behind it, but it's a social trend as well. And actually what we're seeing is this changing dynamic of how grandparents relate to their kids and grandchildren. I think that's something that we're trying to tap into here in this discussion, which is really fascinating. And I think practically one of the ways that works is what you shared, where in this current cost of living challenge, particularly for when it comes to housing for the younger generations, they are tapping into, you know, we hear a lot about the bank of mum and dad, but actually I think we should be hearing more about the bank of nan and pop, because that is really what is where things are at now and increasingly so. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if some of those stats that we saw from asking around the grandparent input, if, you know, if we ask that even in a few years, 2 or 3 years' time, I expect that will be higher still, because I think that social dynamic is still changing. And of course, not every grandparent is in the position to support their grandchildren financially, but we're seeing with more kind of double income, more families and for, say, millennials who are Gen Ys who are settling down and having children, if they're both, you know, both the parents are working, then they're relying more on family as well as daycare to support. So I think there are other ways that grandparents are supporting too, beyond just the financial ways.
Yeah, absolutely. But speaking of the financial ways, as you mentioned, there are heaps of non-financial ways, but I just saw another stat that I thought I'd share with our listeners from some of the content that we presented at our virtual event recently. And it was that only 5% of the current baby boomers said that they had received help from their generation of grandparents in terms of living with them for free or reduced rent. And that compares to 20% of Gen Z today. So one in five Gen Zs wow. have lived with their grandparents for free or for reduced rent. And so even the idea of the granny flat is, it's flipped. It's for the Gen Zs now. The grandparents are living yeah. in the big house
yeah.
and the Gen Zs are living in the granny flat. So it's fascinating how it's shifted, and this demographic are very influential and should be treated that way moving forward.
That is very insightful. I hadn't twigged with the granny flat reference. That's gold.
Yeah, I saw your face. I'm like, he likes that one. So now hopefully our listeners like that too. And the final trend, again, talking about the other end of the generational scope, is talking about our youngest generation in Generation Alpha. We love this generation. We love to talk about them, born between 2010 and 2024, and we are in 2024, so this is the final year, technically, of the Gen Alpha births. That puts the oldest alphas turning 14 this year. In some states in the United States, they can begin to obtain their driver's license when they hit 14 years and 9 months. They can enter into the workforce. I know, it's they're here. And I think last year when the oldest were reaching that teen milestone, people were sitting up and taking note. But now as well, of course, people are, and we've been talking about them for a while. And this trend really just explores Generation Alpha's shift from household influencers to technological trendsetters themselves and how they are wielding substantial economic power. And it's fascinating. We've actually received a bit of a media frenzy lately, even about specifically this trend of Gen Alpha girls predominantly, but I'm sure boys as well, really filling up like the beauty shops across the world, because they're starting to be influenced by these TikTok trends and their parents are buying them expensive skincare. And the millennials among us are like, okay, we got like $12, you know, facial cleansers from the local supermarket. And this generation yeah. are like, no, I've got a 10-step skincare wow. routine. So that up aging is outworking even for these alphas now. And yeah, there's a lot we can put that down to, and we've done a lot of research on that and podcast episodes on it. But yeah, this impact of this youngest generation being very influential, starting to wield more influence and economic power, is something we definitely wanted to acknowledge. But any reflections, Grant? I mean, you've got a little alpha, but she's much younger than the ages we just discussed.
Yeah, no. Although she did learn the word makeup the other day, not because we're giving it to her. She's 18 months, but because she's seen mummy using it. So
yeah,
no, very grateful to have you on the podcast for that one, because that whole world is less familiar to me. The beauty and skincare, but yeah, I think we have profiled previously just the disproportionately large household influence that Gen Alphas have at such a young age. And so, and I think, you know, that we're saying that's now applying to other things in the world as well, like technology, where, you know, they are very much shaping the trends, not just, you know, being shaped by them. So I think that's different. They're very engaged, you know, generation. They've grown up in times when they've been very, empowered through technology and through, you know, given that human agency. So yeah, I'm sure. So end of this year, all of Generation Alpha will be born, and we can start to then talk about them as a complete cohort. So I think as yeah. well, Generation Alpha, I think one of the reasons why people ask us to talk about them, right, Ash, is that they represent the future as well. They're like a window into the future. And so we can kind of get a feel and get some hints about where things are heading when we look at, well, what is this new generation through? How are they wired, and what are they like, and what kind of, how do they engage in the world? Would that be a fair comment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's incredible. And we've been researching about them and looking at the context that shaped them in terms of the technologies and the social markers and the pandemic. And but yeah, like you said, Grant, it's iconic this year because by the end of the year, they will have the entire generation will be here. And then we start to see, yeah, especially the older cohort, really see how they behave and hear more of their voice. And that's just always increasing as more and more of them go online and have more ways to contribute and more active contributors to conversations and what causes they care about and their economic influence. And so, yeah, it's huge and it's exciting. And then we'll start talking about the next generation, if people can believe it, in Gen Beta or Gen Beta, depending on your pronunciation. So exciting times ahead all around.
Yeah, crazy times.
Crazy times. Well, thank you so much for the chat today, Grant. Thanks for coming on this second part of this podcast to talk about the trends of 2024, for your all of your work in that and for your time today. We greatly appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Ash. I think there's some great trends and really we've only scratched the surface in many ways. So I'm sure we look forward to our listeners and clients picking up those conversations to flesh out all, how are things changing? What does that mean for me? So no. Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have the hard task of kind of putting out trends that relate as to as many industries as possible. And I'm sure there'll be other podcasts and a lot of work that we do as advisors to organizations where we get to kind of apply them to a specific industry or a specific context, which we really look forward to. But if you would like to delve more into these trends or insights, please feel free to subscribe to the podcast. You can follow us on social media or specifically head to macrindle.com for some of the resources that we have posted on there about the trends of 2024. So as always, thank you again for listening and bye for now.